Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome, everybody, to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you. Another amazing topic today. I'm really excited about it and just grateful to be with you. For those that are new to the show, my name is Mark Kohler, your host, a CPA, attorney, author, family man, scoutmaster, surfer, just trying to live the dream, just trying to help hopefully our listeners better protect their assets, save taxes, and just build a little more wealth. So that's what we're all about. And today's topic, today's show, is about one of the fastest rising frauds and one of our biggest risks to being ripped off, and that's identity theft. So we're going to be talking about identity theft. We have a special guest joining us here at the bottom of the hour or shortly thereafter who's written an amazing book on this topic, a bestseller with over 50,000 copies sold. So we're really excited to have Robert Siciliano, I apologize, I've been practicing the pronunciation of his name, and of course I get tripped up, but Siciliano, there we go, Robert Siciliano, who's written the books 99 Things You Wish You Knew Before Your Identity Was Stolen. So we'll be having him here later on the show, and I've got just a copious amount of information here to share on ways to avoid identity theft. It's a scary thing, and I'm really excited to talk about it. So thanks for being with us, and for those that are new to the show, we try to take the first little while here to hit some tax tips, legal tips, go over some important announcements that are in the newsletter and blog this week, and hope that we can share something that you can use as a tidbit to share with your family, friends, and network, also use in your own personal life with your family, and again, save you some money or help you make some more money. So if you got the newsletter late last night, you'll see there's a lot of announcements and some upcoming events to put on your calendar, possibly. First, I want to, I guess, give a little shout-out to all the employees and staff and congratulate our firm, Kohler & Ayer, K&E CPAs. We celebrated our 10-year anniversary with a big barbecue last week, and I've got some pictures there in the newsletter of some of the team and the barbecue and the cake and all that, and I can't believe it's 10 years that has flown by since we started the firm. And we've been growing so fast. We've been hiring and going through a lot of growth, and I really want to thank many of you that have been patient during some of those growing pains. If you ever feel like you're not getting the turnaround time or the response or the love that you deserve, please, please send me an email. I'd like to talk to you about it. We'll help in any way we can to make sure that you have a better experience. The important thing is the strategies are there and the technical skill set is there. It's just when we get growing quickly or get busy, the communication can sometimes lack, which you know, and all of you know, I'm a huge proponent and advocate of quality communication in a CPA relationship. So it's tough, but I appreciate it. And exciting, is everybody there? Also in the newsletter, you'll see the link to the new website. I was so excited about the new markjkohler.com website. It is now up and going. And there's a little link. Of course, it's markjkohler.com. But wow, they've used as much makeup and I guess you call it a computer animation, whatever it takes to make me look better. So it looks pretty good. But a lot of new information on there and a new look to the site. So please go check it out, markjkohler.com. Got a video this week. I just shot a video yesterday titled Five Hot Summertime Tax Tips. I hope that many of you get a chance to watch it. It's about 3 minutes long. I I'm trying to. You can't hear me at all. Hello. Okay, we're going to do some testing. Can you still hear? Sorry, I understand that someone is not able to hear me, so we're just testing. Hello. So we're going to see if we can hear it. You can hear me now? So apparently there was a problem there. I'm so sorry. Welcome, everybody, to the show. I don't even know if we had the intro music. Wow, I've got to start over here for a second. I am so sorry. We'll have to clean this up on the editing for the podcast. So I'm going to start fresh. And I apologize for those that are listening live, and we're in silence there for a few minutes. So here, I guess here's what you should have heard.
Worldwide on Wealth Radio. A tax lawyer prescribing a dose of truth for entrepreneurs.
A voice of common sense for the small business owner.
And don't get him started on saving taxes.
This is the Mark Kohler Show. Mark Kohler Show. Kohler Show.
Okay, well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. We had some technical difficulties there initially, and so I want to apologize to all those that were listening live to the show. So I apologize if we are... Okay, so we are rocking live here. Apparently the first 5 minutes you could hear me. We've had some technical difficulties in the studio. I thought I was... No one was able to hear me the first 5 minutes. Now, we're back to where we left off. So, I'm going to start fresh right here, and there's going to be a little bit of editing on the podcast. So, those that are, if you listen to this recorded, you won't even know all of this happened. So, anyway, we had a new video that I just shot yesterday titled Five Hot Summertime Tax Tips. I'm hoping that all of you can get a chance to look at that video. I share five strategies that I know can save you some money this summer. It's kind of fun. So check that out. It's actually 3 minutes long, not 2 minutes. I call them my two-minute tips. But it's hopefully going to give you some nice little helpful info. So now, for upcoming live events, you'll see that there's not as many workshops in June, July, and August. A lot of people are on the road taking their family vacations. But there's a few dates there that some might be in your area, a little bit in Southern California, Northern California, Salt Lake. And check those out. If there's sometimes a little hour workshop, a full-day workshop sponsored by different partners of ours. So check that out if you would like to come to an event where Matt Sorensen or myself are speaking. Sometimes it really enhances your experience. Today's last week's radio show, I just wanted to mention that, taking your credit score to the next level. Fantastic show. I felt bad that we didn't get more into detail. We didn't expect it to really blossom into such an amazing show. So what we're doing is that this month's webinar, I do a live webinar once a month for clients that are part of our little SWA, Strategic Wealth Alliance thing. So next week we're going to be doing a webinar, the entire show is going to be dedicated to corporate and personal credit. And we're going to have Eric Counts and Bob Tierney come on that webinar as well, who were on the radio show. And we're going to dedicate the entire hour. No fluff. It's going to be good. So if you're really interested in that topic, please sign up for the webinar next week. A couple articles there, and we're just kind of rocking along here. So I want to say thank you to all of you that have, again, continued to be a part of the show. We appreciate it. And anyway, so I'm grateful, again, to have such a great resource about it. So anyway, I want to jump into this topic today, and also we'll be doing potentially some tips a little later on or something that could, you know, again, like I said, some tipsters that we try to get on here on a regular basis. We'll see if they join us a little later. But I want to jump into the topic today and get into this identity theft topic. This is, again, last week I felt like our topic for the day we didn't get into as much, as quickly as we should have. So this week I'm going to jump right into it And heaven forbid we actually run out of information, but there is so much on this topic, and it's really shocking what's out there. So if you have a comment about identity theft, something that may have happened to you, some experiences, and you'd like to share with our other listeners, give us a call. Give us a little comment on the chat line, and that is by giving us a call, you can speak with us live at 646-200-4285. That's 646-200-4285. Please give me a call, and we'd love to hear from you here on the show. So for those that aren't aware of this, I mean, this is a huge issue. Each year, approximately 15 million Americans are identity theft victims, with financial losses now totaling close to $50 billion. This is just a huge issue. There's been reports time and time again by police detectives and sergeants around the country. One of the news reports out recently out of a Santa Rosa police department said, quote, "We get more reports of identity theft every day than from traffic accidents," end of quote. So many counties around the United States are reporting identity theft as the top property crime within their jurisdiction. So this is a huge deal. And maybe if you do protect yourself from an actual financial loss, the problem is that it can damage your credit. It can hurt your ability to get a loan or your relationships with your investment companies or advisors. And it can also affect your relationship with the IRS and trigger an audit because someone was stealing your financial information. So this is just absolutely crazy. So I wanted to talk about financial identity theft a little bit, and that's really what we're going to be talking about with our special guest here a little bit later when Robert comes on the show. Is primarily about financial identity theft. But there's a number of identity thefts that might shock some of you. In fact, they're saying there's a whole new tier of identity thefts that are going on around the country, and this is it's just really surprising. So one of the ones that jumped out to me and I wanted to highlight, there was five types of identity theft. So if you're taking notes for one of your newsletters that you're sharing with your friends or family or business contacts, one of the first identity thefts is financial identity theft. But the second is this insurance or medical identity theft. And that's where claims for medical insurance are being made by misrepresentatives of your name. They're trying to go make a claim under your medical insurance to get health coverage. Isn't that odd? I don't know if anybody has even heard of that. And I was pretty shocked to hear that was the second most common type of identity theft, is that people are going in making claims to get prescription drugs or even services at a doctor's office or a hospital using your name so they can get into your medical history. So, in fact, this was through the Theft Resource Center. In their survey just recently, this is a survey that wrapped up all the reports for 2013, said that 43% of all identity thefts were medical-related identity theft issues. So it's just surprising, 43% related to medical. And the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, who tracks this, didn't start tracking it until 2009. And that they said that over somewhere between 27 million and 87 million, their insurance or health medical records have been breached or compromised. So basically what happens in this, again, is that someone's personal information, their social security number, health insurance number, is used for illegally obtaining medical services. Now, you may think, okay, fine, they used my insurance. Hopefully they paid something towards my deductible. Great. You know, so they're racking up my deductible so I can get, you know, that sort of thing. But the scary part is that when people play, you know, disguise themselves as you and go in and steal your identity, their medical history is now getting updated in their records under your name So when you go into a hospital or go to get services, and more medical records are being coordinated between pharmacies and doctors and hospitals, if someone came in and got services and then they said that this certain medication would work and there wasn't allergies or there were allergies to this drug or this surgery was undertaken or not taken, and then all of a sudden you come into the hospital and your medical records are not accurate, they have actually seen people die, and because the doctors and the hospitals operated under misinformation because of a medical identity theft. Pam Dixon, the founder and the executive director of the World Privacy Forum, said, "The medical identity theft is growing and dangerous crime that leaves its victims with little or no recourse for recovery because the person's gone, there's no real medical trace of who this person is, and your medical records are breached, and then people are getting dropped from their medical insurance." So this is a really big mess. And so what this comes down to, and this is something that we talked about in a radio show 3 or 4 months ago, which was the most listened to radio show in the last 3 years on my podcast, and that was the show on How to Be Invisible, where I spoke to the attorney of J.J. Luna, a worldwide privacy expert, who I couldn't even get to on the show because he is underground and addicted to privacy and not letting people even hear his voice. His attorney came on the show, and we talked about his third edition to his new book, How to Be Invisible. Phenomenal radio show. Listen to that podcast if you haven't. But in that show, he talked about how careful we have to be with our Social Security number. And this is the key to identity theft. Now, I know Robert's going to talk about this a little later at the end of in the show, but he talked about how your Social Security number is the number one piece of information that people want to get from you and steal from you. And so there was some tips. Now, again, this is I don't want to steal any of Robert's thunder later in the show, but I want to get this out here, and we'll talk more with him on some of the cutting-edge issues. But number one is never carry your Social Security card in your wallet. And I highlighted this in a recent webinar I did where some people are keeping two wallets, one that's just basically got your debit card and your driver's license, and then there's another wallet which is a little more secure, maybe in a business bag, in your trunk of your car, at home, that has all of your more sensitive information. And so you want to be really careful. In the book J.J. Luna wrote, he literally said to not have any sort of never share your Social Security number unless it's to a government agency. I was literally on a conference call just the other day, and I had a client that I was talking to about setting up their entity and said, "Hey, I need your Social Security number and your date of birth." And they were like, "Now, who's going to get this? Who's going to use it? Where are you using it? I'm really nervous to give this out, and I don't give it out to anyone." And after understanding that it was going to be used on a government form to get the tax ID number, they were like, "Okay, that sounds fine, and you're going to shred this information. You're not going to share it with anyone," that sort of thing. And as an attorney, we have an attorney-client relationship and a fiduciary duty where I can lose my law license and my career if we were to share that with anyone. So I'm held to a much higher standard than someone you might give your Social Security number to across the phone to. So be very, very cautious on who you give your Social Security number to. So this plays into that rise of medical identity theft, is that people are trying to get your Social Security number and then showing up at the hospital and claiming they are you. So be very, very cautious. Now, before we move on to our next type of identity theft, and we're going to talk about criminal driver's license, Social Security number thefts, and highlight those even a little more in depth. We do have one of our regular tipsters. He's been on the show many times before. I know if you're a regular listener, you've become a fan, as I have, of our amazing Lee Chen. He runs our law office out of Southern California, an amazing attorney helping advise clients around the country. He's been in court over 100 times. I'm not sure the exact number of court matters, helping litigate in the courtroom. So he's got a tremendous amount of experience. We love him here and to be a part of our team. So Lee, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. It's great to be on. I don't really like to keep track of how many times in court I'm in court, so I don't have that number either.
Yeah, it's probably not something you want to track. So,
No.
But yeah. Well, I'm so glad you found some time to get with us today. Do you have a little experience you had this week with consulting clients around the country and a little tip for us that could maybe help us in our own efforts?
Well, it's a question that I get normally, and what prompted me to think about this was there was a Supreme Court case that recently came down about inherited IRAs. And the court said that if you inherit an IRA, you know, like from a parent or something like that, you're not going to get the asset protection that you normally get with an IRA. And so it got me to thinking, well, now, you know, they treat the, an inherited IRA differently from your own retirement IRA, which makes sense. But, you know, I get a lot of questions about what type of asset protection do I get with retirement accounts? And so I thought I would, talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I hope some of our listeners will be looking forward to this. I'm going to be writing an article here. I've been taking notes already on O.J. Simpson 20 years later and what it means to asset protection. And I was watching Dateline over the weekend with my wife. She's a huge fan of Dateline. I try to not get her to watch Dateline because it's always some guy that has a double life and he's cheating on his wife and then stealing money from someone.
It's a little depressing.
And so it makes my wife very paranoid. So I'm saying, don't watch Dateline. But they did a Dateline on 20 years after O.J. Simpson and where are all the characters and what's going on since then and how that story played out 20 years ago. And it was really, really interesting. And again, I've been wanting to write an article on this, so I was taking notes during the Dateline show. But this is really what this comes down to, because O.J. Simpson is one of our classic examples of retirement plan asset protection. Sorry, Lee, keep going. I'm just thrilled that this is something you wanted to talk about.
Well, you actually went to the finish line before I started the race. So let me just start off by saying, if you have a 401k or something with your work, you know, anything that is regulated by what we call it ERISA, or the Federal Department of Labor a law that governs, most employer plans, you get the federal protection. You get about as good protection for that retirement plan as you can get. A lot of people, when they leave their work, they are going to roll it over into an IRA, but they don't necessarily know that they are actually changing the asset protection of that retirement plan by doing so.
Gotcha. I think that's a great point. Keep going. This is good. You're on a roll.
So when you do the rollover into the IRA, an IRA generally is not regulated under the federal law. And so when you look at, well, what's the asset protection of my IRA, they're going to look at the state law in which you're residing. So to get to the finish line, one of the reasons why OJ went over to Florida is because Florida law is very favorable with respect to, retirement plans and exemptions. And so really, if you're looking at rolling over your IRA, rolling into an IRA, you might be good idea to get familiar with your state laws in terms of how much protection your state law provides. I think it's an appendix in your lawyers or liars book. Just to be familiar with that, and then we always recommend IRA LLCs if you're going to do something with that, which can also enhance the asset protection.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Some states treat 401ks with more asset protection than an IRA. And so, and also the balance on your IRA or 401k could play into it. So this is a table, actually, in the back of my book, Lawyers or Liars, something I'm again going to be updating that table so that it's a little of course, more accurate by state, because it's so tricky to stay up on that, because every year state laws change. But you want to at least use that as a starting point to see what might be going on in your state. Because let's give an example, Lee. So one of them, you know, could be even a car accident. You're in a car accident. You fell asleep at the wheel. You did something wrong. Maybe you, heaven forbid, you were texting and you rear-ended someone. You're now personally liable for a terrible accident. Your IRA becomes a question.
Absolutely, and then that's when you have to look at the state or in the back of, on the appendix of your book to see how is that state going to treat my IRA? How is it going to protect the IRA? You know, for example, in California, we have a really weird standard that says, well, it's protected to the amount that is needed to support you in your retirement. That doesn't tell me very much. Okay, how much am I going to need to support me in my retirement? I don't know how much that's going to be. So it's really it's not a bright line standard. And so, you know, when you get into a court, you can get all kinds of different results here in California, because it's not like, it's protected up till X amount of dollars or something like that. So that's why you really need to, you know, if you have a large retirement, if you're worried about asset protection, you need to maybe look at some of these rules in your state.
Yeah, no, I love it. Well, Lee, thank you for bringing that topic up. It's a very, very important one, and I'm grateful you did. I know it's a critical issue for many, many folks to be thinking about. So, Lee, thank you, and I appreciate you coming on with that little tip. Folks, if you do have an IRA, 401k, look at what the rules are. Yeah, in your state. Thanks, Lee.
You're very welcome. Good to be on.
All right, thanks. That was great. I actually had one of our listeners just send me an email. I'm really excited about this. I was stumbling over my words a little bit because I was just excited about this little Federal Trade Commission consumer information kind of report on medical identity theft, that the FTC is even releasing statements on this to help people be aware of the medical identity theft. And some of the things they pointed out in this FTC report was signs of medical identity theft and how to identify it. And if many of you are like me, and I'm probably one of the worst, is that when I get these little statements from my insurance company, and whether it's Humana or United Healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, we all have our different insurance companies, but when I get their little notices in the mail, here's your EOB, your insurance explanation of benefits, right? I kind of throw them in a pile, or sometimes I just throw them away. And what the FTC is saying, no, open those up, see where the service took place, what did your insurance company do, and did someone make a claim for some health services that you completely have no knowledge of. So be very, very cautious of bills for medical service providers, EOBs from your insurance company, explanation of benefits, so if there was a claim made on your insurance, any collection calls on your credit report from a medical service or debt you owe. Now, you may have so here's a classic example. You have someone call up and say, hey, you owe us for this debt, and you're like, that wasn't me. I never went to that doctor. That's not even my doctor. And you resolve the issue with the collector, but did you go back to the medical provider and correct the mistakes on your medical records? So it's very important that you get copies of your medical records from any facility that may have provided medical services, and write to your health plan and medical providers and explain which information is not accurate. So this is, again, something to do after a medical identity theft takes place, but this can actually affect your ability to get renewed on your insurance policy, or even affect your premiums on your insurance policy. So make sure that you're very, very cautious and aware of what could be occurring with this medical identity theft. It's just really crazy. In fact, gosh, I just had another email from one of our listeners here. I think this is so interesting. With two or three examples, I want to just read these real quick. There was a Massachusetts psychiatrist who created false diagnosis of drug addiction and severe depression for people who were not his patients in order to submit medical insurance claims for psychiatric sessions that never occurred. One man discovered the false diagnosis when he applied for a job, and he hadn't even been a patient. Another one, identity theft in Missouri, used an identity thief in Missouri used the information of actual people to create false driver's licenses in their names. Using one of them, she was able to enter a regional health center, obtain the health records of a woman she was impersonating, and leave with a prescription in the woman's name. One more. An Ohio woman working in a dental office gained access to protected information of Medicaid patients in order to illegally obtain a prescription drug. I guess we don't even need to start. This goes, the list goes on and on. Thank you so much. This was for our listener out there. I don't want to share their name, but this is just so wonderful that you shared this information. There's so many examples. And we know that prescription drugs are an ongoing and terrible addiction for people in their lives. And rather than go out on the streets, they may resort to medical identity theft to get that prescription. So it's just absolutely critical that we're cautious and very, very careful about sharing our information. So one of the, again, identity theft issues is being careful about our Social Security card. And I already highlighted that about a few minutes ago and making sure we do not share with that with anyone. There's another one, I want to just highlight this real quick too. This is something I pulled before the show today, that there's a whole new tier of and teachers' identity thefts. This is a parent identity theft of more than 40 former and current high school employees who prompted the school district to ask local and state enforcement authorities to help with the investigation. Basically, in this school system, there was a theft of all of the teachers' personal information because they were able to get into the database at the school. And once people were, they were able to get their Social Security numbers, their date of births, they could even apply for driver's licenses, and boom, it starts. Which leads us to one more issue, and that comes to the criminal identity theft. And this is where criminals who, of course, if they get arrested in a particular situation, they want to throw out a different name so that they're not they're throwing the police off and trying to get away with, you know, some sort of crime. In many cases, the imposter will appear in court. This is another privacy rights clearinghouse report that in some cases the imposter will appear in court for the traffic or misdemeanor violation and plead guilty without the victim being aware that they've even been charged with this crime. So they use your name, and some identity theft victims, unaware of the earlier criminal activity by the imposter, may learn of the impersonation when they're denied employment or terminated from employment or even pulled over for a routine traffic check or violation and come to find out they have a some sort of history or situation with the court system. So this is just, again, really scary. And this is something that J.J. Luna talked about in his book, How to Be Invisible, is that one of the places folks are trying to steal this information from is the glove box of your car. And so we talked about having a clear and separate location for you to be able to get to the information quickly if you need to in your trunk, but not putting a lot of information in your glove box. People are reporting about their car getting broken into, and they're not even taking their information, stealing, you know, items in the car, but they're going straight to the glove box to steal information. So it's just really shocking what's going on with this identity theft. Now, we actually covered in that interview on the J.J. Luna book these four tiers of asset protection, or privacy, I should say. And we highlighted later on kind of these level one procedures that 80% of Americans could do better that would help them and prevent from potential identity theft. And so I wanted to just highlight these 15 different steps and that we at our office created for a special webinar we did a month ago. I'm just going to run through these and see if it, again, helps you in any possible way. Number one is pay for a credit bureau tracking service. I've had before on the show, LexingtonLaw.com. I think they do a great job. That's LexingtonLaw.com, as in Lexington, Kentucky. But it's a service that basically lets you know if someone's applying for credit in your name and helps build your credit. And you could use FreeCreditReport.com or any of those, you know, 50 different services out there. But have someone tracking your credit and giving you notices if someone applies for credit in your under your Social Security number. And then keep critical data under watchful eye in a separate location. Social Security number, driver's license, credit cards, bank account numbers, tax IDs for your business, insurance policy numbers, tax information, birth certificates. Where are you keeping that information? Would it be easy for someone to get a hold of? Number three, something I talk about on a regular basis in workshops is having a fireproof safe. A fireproof safe that you can use to keep a lot of these careful, you know, these critical data, and keep it in a fireproof safe that you can use and access if you need to, but being really, really cautious about it. So very, very, very important to have some place. Maybe it is even a safe deposit box if some of you feel like that would be affordable for you. And number four, go paperless with an encrypted cloud hosting service. I'm trying to do that, is keep more of my information encrypted in a cloud hosting service where I can access it with a username and password if I need to get that data. It's scanned in and it's there. I don't want any paper around me. If someone broke into my house, they'd be like, where's all this stuff? Well, it's on a cloud somewhere, and you'd have to beat me up to get my password. Well, I don't want to give anybody any clues, but but basically I'm the only one that's got that password and information to get to that info, and that's what you want. Number five, coordinate your estate plan with all of your stuff. And what I mean by that is, if those of you know that we help you with your wills and trusts, and we give it all to you in a leather binder, make sure there's a trusted person that knows where all of this location, all the location of all this data. Because if you died tomorrow, who would be able to access all this? And it's just critical that someone is up there to help you out. Number seven, carry two wallets. I mentioned that a little earlier. Have a separate location for some of that critical data. And then also copy all the contents of your wallet. Keep it in a safe place, a cloud or deposit box. Put it somewhere where it's not if you're going to lose your wallet or your purse, it's when. So you should have a copy of it. The other day, I thought I had lost my wallet. And I was like, oh, and I didn't make a copy of everything in there. And I thought, Mark, you're preaching this. You got to do it. I need to do more of that. Number nine, confirm all your firearms. If you, any of you listening today own guns, are they properly registered? Do you need licenses? What are the rules in your state? I know sometimes people think, well, I'm going to just... ignorance is bliss. If I just don't know what's going on, I'll be okay. But you, some of us don't want to look up the rules in the state because then we'll be nervous that we've just got a problem. But it's really important if you own guns to know what the rules are in your state for handguns versus shotguns and rifles. Do they need to be registered or licensed? Number 10, move the contents of your glove box in your car to the lock box in your trunk. We talked about that. Number 11, consider how important social media is to you. This is getting more and more common where people ask, you know, should we be sharing on social media all this personal information of where I'm traveling to, when I'm gone? People can really build a profile about you when you put so much information on social media. I'm trying to be a little more cautious with what I share on social media, but I love it. I like having that social media family and people I know and followers and fans, but it's scary. Number 12, be careful of outgoing mail. Many people have cautioned us for years, and J.J. Luna in his book talks about putting mail in your mailbox with a little flag up is one of the most dangerous places to put your mail. You're just inviting a criminal to just stop in and just steal what's in your mailbox. So drop off mail at the post office or in a container at the corner. Number 13, have a shredder at home. And this is one of these cross-cutting shredders, not the one that just goes right down the middle. Make sure that you have a shredder and you're using it and being very, very careful about what ends up in the garbage. And then two more before we get to our special guest today. Install antivirus software on your computers. Be careful because many people are trying to log in through your Wi-Fi and through your home network and getting to data. So be very careful with, and the antivirus software nowadays can let you know if people have accessed your computer. And then number 15, don't keep sensitive information on laptops. Be very careful about what you put on your laptops and what you carry around in your laptops. How many of you, again, have lost a laptop where you were going through an airport and set it down and then, boom, lose it? And think of how much information's on there. Now, folks, that is what I call level one procedures. All of that is easy. It's affordable. It's fairly simple. It doesn't cost you a bunch of legal fees or craziness. And if many of us did just these level one procedures, it could change your life and make much more difficult for an identity thief to take advantage of you. Well, I'm excited now to introduce a special guest that we've been waiting for today and who I introduced a little bit earlier, Robert Siciliano, the CEO of IDTheftSecurity.com and the author of the book 99 Things You Wish You Knew Before Your Identity Was Stolen. He's fiercely committed to informing, educating, and empowering Americans so they can be protected from violence and crime in the physical and virtual worlds. It's just, again, as we've talked about here over and over again today, one of the most prevalent crimes in America today. And so we're grateful to have him here with us for a few minutes today. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, good day to you.
Well, and I know that you, it's just an honor to have you here with us with our, I've told you via email to our thousands of our listeners. Of course, I wish I was Good Morning America. I know that you've been on many, many national shows and radio shows, and finding a time for our little group of followers here in our law and accounting firm around the country, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's important to get the word out.
Yes, sir. And, well, gosh, we've been talking about this topic for the last half hour, and I've been just fumbling through what my research has taught me, and we're really excited to have you as an expert on here. Can you tell us how prevalent and how common identity theft now really is? I've been trying to emphasize it, but I know you're probably more aware of what the statistics are now and what's going on in the country. Tell us how bad it is.
Well, it is certainly one of the easiest crimes to commit and one of the hardest crimes to get caught for. So it's very close to what might be considered the perfect crime. And some studies show it's affecting anywhere from 8 to 12 million people every single year. And some say that, you know, death and taxes are inevitable, and I guess now so is identity theft. So it's one of those crimes that it's not a matter of, if but when. And so it's a matter of understanding the nature of the crime, who it happens to, how it occurs, and ultimately what you got to do to protect yourself, whether you're a child or a young adult, somebody who's in the process of getting married and having kids, whether they're a boomer, or even, you know, somebody that's dealing with somebody's estate because they've passed. Everybody from the beginning to the end is a potential victim of this crime. And so understanding the different types of identity theft and how they happen, and ultimately what you as an individual, as a consumer, as a citizen need to do to protect yourself and then, of course, your family is essential today.
Well, I don't mean to paint a picture of doom and gloom. I appreciate you sharing how critical it is people need to take this, or how serious it is. But you said something interesting there, that it's not if, it's when. But we can certainly reduce the potential or the risks of identity theft so that you're not such an easy target. I think you listened to some of those little, I had went through 15 little things that people could do that are simple and affordable, but what are some of the easiest and something that most people should be doing they're not to prevent this?
All right. Well, first, it all depends on whether it's new account fraud or account takeover, which those are the two fundamental kinds and types of identity theft. Certainly there's other types, but it's new account fraud and account takeover that we need to be most concerned about, and you can do the most, you know, to protect yourself from either or. So let's just say it's new account fraud. New account fraud is, of course, when somebody opens up a new account under your name. New account fraud might be they get a mobile phone account under your name, you know, they get AT&T, Verizon, and such, And so that's a line of credit that's opened up under your name, new account fraud, or a new credit card, or a new loan, right? And with all forms of new account fraud, ultimately that affects your credit report, your ability to get credit, your credit scores. Ultimately, with new account fraud, that line of credit ends up on your credit report. And, of course, if the bad guy doesn't pay it, then that negatively affects your credit scores. Okay, so...
Well, I thought the bad guy, if he was going to get some credit under my name, he'd at least pay the bill. But I guess that's not the case.
You know, strangely enough, sometimes they do. Sometimes they do pay the bill. And they live and they function as you for quite some time. Yeah, as odd as that sounds, many identities do pay the bill, yes, because they don't want to get caught. They want to function under your identity for as long as they possibly can. But in general, they don't pay the bill. But that being said, the way that you protect yourself from new account fraud is one of two ways, and I do both, right? So the more things you do, the better off you're going to be, the more layers of protection you have, the more secure you're going to be. Identity theft protection is one option. Now, of course, there's a financial investment involved in identity theft protection. And if you seek out all the different identity theft protection firms and determine what your options are, you'd figure out that it's around $10 to $15 per month to protect yourself from identity theft with a paid service. And so for a family of four, you know, mom, husband, wife, two kids, whatever, you're looking at about $250, $300 a year, which I think is a good investment. And what it does is it monitors your credit report. It monitors the new lines of credit that are being opened up under your name. And in the event that a new line of credit is being opened, then you're informed of that new line of credit, and then you can turn around and either dispute that new line of credit or just allow it to go through if in fact, you know, you are the one that opened it up. So that's what identity theft protection does, and it monitors your kids' identities as well and lets you know if somebody's trying to open up new lines with their social. So I'm a big believer in identity theft protection. That's definitely an option. I have that. The other option for protecting yourself from new account fraud is what's called a credit freeze. A credit freeze. Are you familiar with the credit freeze?
I believe so, and it probably is much what it, like it sounds like. Basically, no one can get credit under your social. You tell all the bureaus not to allow any credit applications. Is that correct?
Correct. So a credit freeze is absolutely essential. So I have a credit freeze, and I have identity theft protection. Everybody in my life, everybody in my family has a credit freeze, because the way this works is if you freeze your credit, you go to the three credit bureaus, Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, and you search out, you know, the term credit freeze along with the name of the bureau, and you'll come to the first page of search, which ultimately will bring you to their pages that revolve around, you know, what you got to do for their credit bureau to get a credit freeze. And it locks down and or freezes your credit so that nobody, including you, can open up a new line of credit unless your credit is thawed or unlocked. And this is either free, $5, $10, or $15 per credit bureau. So the least it's going to cost you is nothing. The most it's going to cost you is $45, depending on the state that you live in, because there's three major credit bureaus. So 3 times 15 is 45. And when you freeze your credit, it gives you control over your credit, report, so that a bank or a lender, when they go to check your credit to determine if you're a good option because they just received an application for credit, they can't see your scores if your credit's frozen. So they will not lend money to anybody or grant credit to anyone if they can't see the credit scores because your credit's frozen. So I recommend that everybody go out and they do that right now because it's the best thing. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, is it difficult to remove the freeze? Say you're ready to go buy a new car or proceed with some sort of loan. Is it difficult to get it removed so you could quickly get a loan if you needed one?
So I have my credit frozen, and every couple of years, my wife and I might do something that involves, you know, getting a new line of credit. And what that means is it means taking the information that the credit bureau provided you, which is generally a website that you visit, and a username and password you type in. And so it's, you know, no different than going to any website. And then once you're there, you log into your account, and it'll give you the option to unlock or thaw your credit for a week or 2 weeks, or permanently for that matter. And it's just a matter of, you know, navigating through a couple different settings. And generally, it takes no more than 5 minutes per credit bureau to log in and unlock your credit. And it might cost $5 per credit bureau to unlock your credit. And that, to me, is the best thing you can do because it's a done deal. Like, it's, you know, your credit's frozen, and you have control over it. You can thaw it or freeze it at will. And what credit freezes do is they take you out of the loop of getting instant credit. So if you walk into a major retailer and they say, hey, do you want to get 10% off this purchase? Well, you can't because your credit's frozen. So what a credit freeze does is it forces you to pre-plan large purchases, which, you know, in your line of work, I'm sure you think of that as a good thing. You know?
Yeah, well, this totally flies in the face of average Americans. So we love credit. So this is a good thing for people to be doing anyways, kind of a self-control prevention, help. That's a great idea. I love that. I probably need to do that at least with my kids as they're heading off to college, is to help them learn how to put a freeze in, and then maybe I control the password too. But what about the current accounts? So I've got bank accounts, I've got investment accounts, or my home, or other assets. Isn't it harder for a thief to get at those accounts? Is the new accounts where most of the action's at, or can people get to my current assets?
So we talked about, you know, protecting yourself from new account fraud. Now, account takeover, like your credit card, your bank account, and everything else, when it comes to your credit card, you can't do anything to protect your credit card. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know, every time you give out your credit card number, there's a chance that the person who you gave it to could use it without your authorization. Every time you use it, there's a possibility it could be hacked. So you can't protect yourself from credit card fraud. But what you can do is, of course, monitor your statements. You know, you look at your statements, you make sure that all the charges are authorized by you. And as long as you're doing that at a minimum monthly, then you'll be fine as long as you refute those charges within a couple of months. Other than that, what I also do is I monitor my statements electronically via the web once a week, and I also have applications from each of my credit card companies on my mobile. So my smartphone has apps that, you know, I can log into every day easy enough to see their recent activity. Or what I also have done is with every one of my bank and credit cards is you go into the website of each of the bank and credit cards and set up alerts. So I get text messages and or emails with every single charge.
Mm.
Great. So I might get an email or a text message that says, oh, there's been $80 spent at, you know, Sally Beauty Supply. And I'll send a text off to my wife and say, hey, honey, did you just buy something from Sally Beauty? And she'll say, oh, are you stalking me again? I said, well, kind of. did you just buy something from Sally Beauty? And she'll say, yes. And then, so I know it's a charge authorized by us. So that's protecting yourself from credit card fraud reactively, because that's all you can do. Then as far go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to inject there. It's funny you bring that up, because I was this weekend with one of my buddies. We were out doing scouting, something I mentioned earlier. I'm a scoutmaster, and he got one of those little alerts. And I didn't think of it at the time that that's exactly what you're explaining to do. And his wife had just bought him something at Williams and Sonoma, this big purchase on the eve of Father's Day. And so he was like, what the heck? Why is she buying me something at, you know, Williams and Sonoma? That's not where I would want my Father's Day present. And so he immediately texted her, and she's like, you're not supposed to see that. And I won't spoil his privacy there by sharing what she did get him, but it was kind of funny. So it is true, you know, that getting those little alerts can be really, really helpful and quick information as to where the money's being spent. So you got to make sure you have a strong relationship with your spouse.
My wife does complain that she can't surprise me with the different purchases, but I would rather, you know, because my birthday, Father's Day, you know, I can't be surprised. I would rather not be surprised in regards to a gift than be surprised in regards to fraud, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a trade-off. And then as far as like your bank accounts go, like your online banking, you know, the funds in your account, other critical accounts you might have, like your investment accounts, the most important thing there, of course, is simply pay attention to your statements. But proactively, you got to manage your data security. You got to manage the security in your devices. You got to manage your antivirus, anti-spyware, anti-phishing, and firewall. You got to make sure that you have basic security in place so that nobody can hack your accounts based on, you know, your own devices, whether it's your mobile phone or your PC or laptop. So, you know, having the fundamentals in place, you know, like a secure wireless or wired connection to the internet, making sure that for wireless you have encryption in your router. And then, of course, there's password management. You know, so many of us have 10, 20, 30 passwords, and the only way to manage those properly today is using a password manager. You know, a password manager is a tool that you download. It's a software that it connects to your browser. It's a toolbar. And so every time you want to log into, say, your banking, you queue up your password manager, and it does just that. It enters your passwords into the browser, into the website, and it will also choose a secure password for you. It stores them locally on your device and in the cloud. I have 650-plus passwords, and I know maybe 7 or 8 of them on my most critical accounts. And yeah. So I know my most critical passwords for my most critical accounts, and they're all different, so no two passwords are the same. And so for the rest of them, my password manager knows them and enters them at will, when I need them to be entered. And so you can't have the same password for all of your accounts, and you have to use uppercase, lowercase, numbers, letters, and so forth. And as long as you're doing all that basic stuff, you know, secure wireless connection, antivirus, anti-spyware, password management, and keeping your device's operating system updated, right? So you have to have the latest version of the operating system for your iPhone, for your BlackBerry, for your PC, for your Mac, and so forth, because usually that means it's the most secure version of your operating system, most secure version of your browser as well. All those fundamentals are what, in general, protects you from account takeover beyond simply monitoring your accounts.
No, fantastic. Well, Robert, in just the last couple minutes here, please tell us how people can get access to your ongoing blog, your services, a copy of your book. Obviously on Amazon, they could head there for your book. But what resources would you like to share with our listeners and followers?
Well, certainly, if you want to learn more about identity theft protection, I work with bestidtheftcompanies.com. Again, that's bestidtheftcompanies.com. That's PANYS.com, and I'm also a spokesperson for McAfee Antivirus, and if you want to check me out, I'm online at robertsiciliano.com as well.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for finding some time with us. These 99 things you wish you knew before your identity was stolen, we probably covered about 4 of them, so there's a lot there. Any final words of wisdom for us before we let you go?
So I speak on this stuff in front of, you know, audiences all the time, and I'll spend, you know, 45 minutes up to 3 or more hours talking about this stuff. And when it's all said and done, you know, my final few words that I usually, bestow upon my audience is, look it, don't worry about any of this stuff, like none of it. You know, despite this fact that, you know, you've probably just spent an hour, rattling some cages, I tell people don't worry about this stuff, but you got to do something about it. So there's no sense in getting all freaked out every time there's a data breach, but do something about it. Check your credit card statements. Download the application from your bank or credit card company. Update your PC's operating system and antivirus. So don't worry about this stuff, but do something about it, because as long as you're doing something about it, in most cases, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, no, fantastic advice. Well, Robert, thank you for all you're doing for us as Americans across the country. We appreciate and wish you the best, and we'll be sharing your website information on our newsletter next week again as a follow-up, and thank you again for being with us.
Hey, thank you so much.
All right, well, thank you. Well, folks, here, just an amazing hour, I think, of helpful information. Sorry for those live listeners that had some experienced those technical difficulties in the beginning. We'll clean that up on the podcast for those that are listening to this recorded. We wish you the best. Please tune in every week at 11 a.m. For another amazing, I hope, Mark Kohler show, talking about building wealth, saving taxes, and protecting our assets.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.